Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q4 FY23 earnings conference call of Pearl Global Industries Limited. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations the company has on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Pallab Banerjee, MD, for his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Hello everyone, good morning. Welcome to our Q4 23 and full financial year of 2023 earnings conference call. Along with me, we have our Group CFO, Mr. Sanjay Gandhi, and SGA, our Investor Relations Advisors. I hope all of you have had a chance to go through our annual results and the investor presentation uploaded on the exchange and our company website. The outstanding performance of fiscal 2023 year is a testament to our competitive advantage. For financial year 23, the company has declared an interim dividend of rupees 5 per share at the end of the fiscal year, resulting in a total dividend payout of rupees 7.5, 75% of our face value for this year of financial year of 2023. As skillfully, our core strengths of multinational presence, design team, shift towards the asset-light model, and strong customer relationships to achieve this sustained growth, which is primarily driven by incremental orders from our existing customers and with better realizations and the orders for value-added sales from the customers that we acquired in the last three to four years. Our presence across the global textile chains, value chains in Asia, has helped us cater to our global clients effectively. Utilizing our global capacities and mitigating uncertainties by leveraging our facilities in different markets. While the global operating environment continues to remain challenging amidst the higher interest costs and the inflation rates, which are high, especially in the Western economies, we expect revenue to be remaining at the same level or to show some growth as of last year during the quarter one of financial year 24 and throughout the H1 of financial year 24. However, we are putting all our effort, and we are confident of achieving 15%-20% revenue CAGR over the next three to four years. Having said this, our margins could remain under pressure for the industry, and we at PGIL are confident of maintaining our margins between 7%-8% on full-year basis. Our efforts will be to improve the same, which we are confident of achieving by, you know, once the macro factor stabilizes, then definitely we would be in a very, very healthy position. That's something we are confident of. To navigate challenges pertaining to the uncertain business environment, we are setting up very stringent risk governance framework to hedge against the sudden increase in raw materials or poor performance financially of some of our overseas brands and customers. And of course, the rising interest costs that we have seen, hopefully like no more interest costs from the US market, but we never know. This shall help us in keeping our profitability intact. We incurred a total CapEx of rupees 48 crores financial year 23, and we intend to incur a CapEx of anywhere between 50-60 crores again in the financial year 24. With this, I would like to give you some information of key developments in each country that Pearl Global has its operations in. In India, the management has taken steps to address inefficiencies in partnership factories operating in India during the current quarter. We have ended up that partnership and brought the factory under Pearl's umbrella. So we are now completely managing that operation. Furthermore, the company remains committed to exploring opportunities for expansion of its capacities in India. However, is supported by various government initiatives such as the PLI scheme, the state incentive schemes for expansion. We're going through all the details. These initiatives incentivize the manufacturing within this country, within our country of India, making it favorable for this opportunity and for the growth in India. The company has successfully added 2 to 3 new customers in India. Strategic move is expected to contribute to the growth of the company's order book in the coming years. On to Bangladesh, factory has started generating positive return in the first year of its commercial operations. You have heard in our last calls. It has now generated a healthy ROC and a cash flow. Further, recently acquired company, the factory that we did in the last year, has proven to be valuable asset to our company. The integration of the brownfield acquisition with PGIL has been quite seamless, resulted in increased revenues and improving our profitability. The positive and the growing ROC further reinforces the success of this acquisition. In Vietnam, the factories that we have achieved higher levels of productivity thanks to an improved product mix and an expanded range of offerings for customers. Consequently, this has led to higher realizations and significant enhancement in the operational efficiencies. Our partnership model is successfully evolving in Vietnam and is giving us good results. In Indonesia, the company has successfully expanded its operations by constructing a new facility on the land acquired in 2021. With a capital expenditure of rupees 10 crores, new facility replaces the old one, and also it offers 35% increase in our total capacity in Indonesia. This enhanced facility enables the management of more complex processes, allowing the company to deliver value-added products to the clients, resulting in improved per-piece realization. This higher capacity is expected to drive increased revenues for Indonesia in the next fiscal year of 2024-25. Other offices, like in Europe, our company has opened up an office in Spain as well. The strategic move positions the company closer to the European textile value chain, facilitating the acquisition of strengthens the collaboration with the existing clients, design and development, by being next to the operations or their design offices in Spain. With Europe boasting a robust value chain, the company anticipates continued growth through its presence in this region. In USA, the company has set up a separate division, branding and licensing opportunity. We have hired a new CEO as good number of years of experience to develop similar kind of business in his previous stints. This opportunity will take time, but we believe this will be another growth engine for us. For US customers, in the pandemic and post-pandemic, when the logistics challenges were there, nearshore production became important. And so most of our customers are talking to us to explore these near-shore opportunities. That means manufacturing happening in the CAFTA region or the Central America region. So we are exploring these near-shore manufacturing opportunities, and we expect aim should be finalized in the next couple of months. The customer's assurance of doing business, so this is a very good opportunity for us. With this, I think I have given you more or less what's happening within our company. Now I would like to hand over this call to Sanjay Gandhi, Mr. Sanjay Gandhi, our group CFO, to run us through the financial performance.
Thank you, Pallav. Good morning, everyone. It gives me immense pleasure to report another successful year for our company with record-breaking financial and operational group level performance. I'm pleased to announce that for FY23, on a consolidated basis, our revenue has increased by 16.4% year-on-year to rupees 3,158 crore versus 2,713 crore in FY22, primarily due to increased orders from existing customers and improved realization from newly customers who have been acquired during the year, integration of Alpha acquisition, and improved operational efficiency at Bangladesh and Vietnam units. EBITDA for FY23 stood at rupees 255.5 crore, a growth of 81.8% year-on-year versus rupees 140.6 crore in FY22. While our margin improved by 290 basis points year-on-year from 5.2% in FY22 to 8.1% in FY23. This improvement in margin is a result of better product mix, improving operational efficiencies, consistent improved profitability in Vietnam and Bangladesh operations, and integration of new acquisition, which is Alpha in Bangladesh. PAT for the year stood at rupees 153 crore versus 70.1 in FY22. EPS is rupees 68.9 in FY23 versus 31.46 in FY22. For quarter 4 FY23, our consolidated revenue declined by 18.5% to rupees 730 crore versus 896 crore in FY22. EBITDA grew by 55.9% to rupees 62.8 crore compared to rupees 39.7 crore in the same quarter last year. Margin improved from 4.4% in FY22 to 8.6% in FY23. On a standalone basis, revenue for the year stood at rupees 1,103 crore versus 933 crore in FY22, a growth of 18.2% year-on-year. This growth was a result of increasing business from our existing clients and addition of new strategic clients. Better product mix on account of increase in our product range offered to customer, resulting in an increased realization. Operational efficiency improved by employing best-in-class practices. EBITDA margin improved from 4.4% in FY22 to 6.3% in FY23. PAT for the year stood at rupees 53.8 crore in FY23 versus 27.2 crore in FY22. EPS doubled from rupees 12.54 in FY22 to rupees 24.84 in FY23. For the quarter ended quarter 4 FY23, revenue declined 21.5% to rupees 274 crore. Margin improved from 4% in FY22 to 7.8% in FY23. PAT for the quarter grew 119.3% to rupees 27.9 crore versus 12.7 crore in FY22. Our strong performance is reflected with our strengthening balance sheet. On a consolidated basis, our net worth for FY23 stood at Rs. 723 crore versus 599 crore in FY22. Gross debt declined to Rs. 448 crore in FY23 versus 564 crore in FY22. Net gearing ratio improved to 0.21 times from 0.67 times in FY22. Return on capital employed improved from 12.4% in FY22 to 24.2% in FY23. Rupees 42.5 crore of margin money earmarked as LC payment is excluded from capital employed calculation. Net working capital days improved from 63 days in FY22 to 38 days in FY23. Receivable days declined to 24 days in FY23. From 49 days in FY22. Inventory days decreased to 59 days in FY23 from 73 days in FY22. And payable days declined to 45 days in FY23 from 59 days in FY22. Debt service coverage ratio improved from 1.95 times to 2.3 times. Net debt to EBITDA stand at 0.6 times. On a standalone basis, our net worth for financial year 23 stood at rupees 381 crore versus 344 crore in FY22. Gross debt declined to rupees 206 crore in FY23 versus rupees 260 crore in FY22. Net gearing ratio improved to 0.31 times from 0.57 times in FY22. Return on capital employed improved from 10.3% in FY22 to 16.2% in FY23. Net working capital days improved from 63 days in FY22 to 40 days in FY23. Receivable days declined to 37 days in FY23 from 45 days in FY22. Inventory days increased to 87 days in FY23 from 45 days in FY22. Payable days declined to 42 days in FY23 from 70 days in FY22. Debt service coverage ratio improved from 0.8 times to 2.3 times. Net debt to EBITDA stand at 0.6 times for FY23. With this, I would like to open the floor for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question comes from Keshav with Ruxin Investors. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, sir. Sir, this nearshoring opportunity spoke of in the opening address. Would that be on partnership basis or we're planning to set up our own facilities?
A joint venture. We are looking into the existing factories which are already operating in that region.
Okay, sir. And so what's your sense on what kind of products can really be nearshored to LATAM in the medium to long term?
See, the cost of manufacturing in this region is higher compared to our Asia, but there is a duty-free advantage also because of the CAFTA region. So we will be using that benefit, and despite the cost being high of manufacturing cost and the raw material cost to a certain extent, but as you land into USA, it's similar to what's coming from Asia. So that's the objective, that's the goal that we're working on. The product that you asked about, we will be starting with mostly more of knit product because that's where we're seeing the demand coming back in this region because that's the volume driver and the retailers want to keep a leaner inventory on certain products. So that's something is a discussion that we are having with most of our customers. Sorry, do I answer all your questions or?
Yes. So just one thing. So is that more of a de-risking strategy from our clients or we see longer-term negative impacts in Southeast Asia or India from that?
I don't see it will be a long-term negative for Asia in general. Because this particular region doesn't have that much of capacity.
Okay, all right, sir. Secondly, so the way we've built our business, we're playing to the strengths of different countries that have their own differentiators. For instance, high volume, low values, cotton stuff you have Bangladesh, more value added India can do, Vietnam would have synthetics. And for the past 2 years, a sizable quantum of growth for us has come from clients less than 5 years old. This year, 50% of our growth was led by new clients. But now the macros are ripe for bigger players to see benefits of consolidation. There have been reports of Indian garmenters going for partial shutdowns because of weak Christmas booking. So, are we seeing the benefit of having a broad-based manufacturing base and getting more inquiries from our existing clients to transfer more share to us?
Our endeavor would be always to have a better market share of our key clients. So that's all the efforts is in that direction. And in my previous calls, in the previous quarterly calls also, I always mentioned that we at Pearl believe in having a presence in all the supply chain of our apparel garments, fashion garments in the world. So there are about four or five big supply chains that we can talk about. Like I have mentioned earlier also, like there is Southeast Asia, South Asia, Mediterranean region. Sure, that means Europe buying from Europe and US buying within US. So that's how like most of our customers and most of these big retailers, either in Europe or in US, they source from all these channels or all these locations. At Pearl, we always had that endeavor to be in presence in most of these supply chains. So if you look at it, we are already supplying to our customers from Southeast Asia. We are supplying from South Asia. Now we would be supplying to them. We are adding Central America as well. So very close to it. So, and then the only two areas which are not there would be more, I would say, the Mediterranean region and maybe onshore for some of our clients. So these are two things that will be left behind. So when you talk of the complete sourcing for these customers or for these customer partners, so they use all these five channels. Thus, we would always try to grab their market share by having our presence in maximum number of these channels. So that's the way that we'll continue to operate.
Sure, sir. I have more questions, but I will come back in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one. Our next question comes from Vishal Prasad with BP Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. So in our industry, usually clients engage in two ways. Either they directly outsource to the manufacturer or they outsource through a middleman, like Li and Fung and some other companies. So, and there are some clients who engage in both these models. So could you please share when does a client directly outsources to a manufacturer and in what cases they go through a middleman?
My experience, what I have seen is that organizations who are much well-organized and much more evolved in their sourcing strategies, they do have their own offices, global offices, where they source from. For example, if I speak of companies like Gap. Their own sourcing offices. They don't engage any middlemen or any agents in between. Whereas there are other brands who are who may not have such a matured supply chain organization within their organization. So they would like to take the benefit of some of these evolved partners like Lianfeng, which has got a very extensive sourcing base across the globe. Similarly, there are other companies like MGF, there are companies like New Times. So these are the agents like who are playing a big role in. I've also seen like Jap, for example, definitely go through some kind of middlemen, like the Mitsubishi of the world and Stylen that we work with, or there are others. So they do definitely have a way or process of working in which they rely quite a lot extensively on this kind of network. So yeah, it depends on the market. It depends on the customer's maturity level in terms of how they're sourcing the garments. Is that answer your question?
So let's say we take Walmart for an example. I don't know if we work with them, but that's a general example I'm taking. They take both the routes where they partner with the manufacturer and sometimes they partner with the middleman as well. So they are very capable, I mean, Walmart in terms of their own supply chain, and they're a huge company. But so, and what I'm trying to understand is, what goes behind taking the decision on this is the part of the business which should go to the manufacturer directly, and this is the part of the business which should go to middlemen? Is there something that you have noticed, or is that generic?
Okay. So you see, like, when you talk of a middleman, like when you talk of a specific agent, the retailers would go to that agency or to that middleman for a host of services. Service like, you know, finding a manufacturer in a particular country, maintaining the communication, the quality inspections, supervision. So those are the services that this middleman provides. For a company like Walmart and all, also work with a lot of direct importers. So most of the big retailers, the large format retailers in US, they source from two, even if they don't go to an agent, they would have vendors who directly do FOB shipment, and their company, for example, Walmart, will have their own logistics team who will be bringing in the goods. Or they may have, they may be buying from suppliers who are based in USA. That supplier might be going to a manufacturer, manufacturing unit and placing a business. But in Walmart's record, that's a direct supplier. So they are not acting as a middleman. I'm just giving this example. So there are three things. That means, like, if you're talking about, there is an agency business, there is a direct business. Now, agency business are the people, like, for example, there are very many brands, let's say a middle-level brand like a J.Crew, a Chico's, or Ann Taylor, who are not very big, but they do rely on this kind of middlemen, a lot of business that happens through these middlemen or the agencies, like which I mentioned to about in our industry. And then there are other people, like, you know, US, a big chunk, I would say, the people who are importer on record. That means they would be buying the goods from China, from India, from Bangladesh and all, and they would warehouse it in US. That means they would be the importer on records to bring the goods into US and then supply to these retailers. So broadly, there are three. So if you are mixing in your group, the second and third together, so I was trying to say that, okay, there is also, in that way, there are two groups, if I'm making sense to you.
Okay, sure. The second question that I have is, do we engage directly with our clients in all the engagements, or sometimes we also go through a middleman?
Our preference is always to have a direct engagement. So most of our business is through direct engagement. Of course, there could be a middleman, like, who would be doing a kind of service to the customer. So in this, services will come through. For example, like, you know, we have a, they do certain, take certain services from Lianfeng. But our engagement with the course management is direct. So we speak to them direct. The business planning, the strategization that happens over for a longer period of time, those kind of conversations would be happening directly with the customer. But the operationally certain activities is done by the agent. Same thing is for customers like Muji in Japan. Relationship is direct, but they do have certain activities they do through. Pure agency business that I think we have would be quite insignificant. Like, you know, I think the entire group, less than, I would say, 10% of the business would be happening, which is we are working through an agency or an agent who is dealing with the customer.
Okay. And, sir, do we get our orders through a competitive bidding, or usually it's through relationships and negotiations?
Again, that depends on the strategy of the customer. There are certain products, which is the core basic items. Most of the customers want to have some kind of bidding process. Now, it may be an open bid, or it may be a bid between only a handful of vendors who do this product for them. So that generally is a practice which is quite prevalent, especially in the Western markets.
So bidding would be L1, whoever quotes the least gets the business?
Not necessarily. They generally look at the price, the delivery speed, and also in some cases the design and capability. So maybe, like, you know, of course, the endeavor would be to place it to an L1, but there could be certain other parameters which supersedes in their decision making. Now, this I'm talking more from my experience in the past, but that's generally the trend that I've seen. And even as a manufacturer also, we see that sometimes.
So price is not the only criteria. I mean, your relationship and your ability to deliver definitely comes into picture.
Yes, delivery performance is definitely important. Very important, in fact.
So last question, last call when I asked, you mentioned that 10 to 15% of our revenue comes through partner
partner factories, yes. So if you see that certain matured markets like Vietnam and to a certain extent Bangladesh also, we do have partnership factories where we do source from. So it helps us mitigating some of our risks. Also, sometimes the fluctuation of the quantity and some quantity is required in a bigger number in a smaller amount of time, where our capacities along with partnership capacities can be used. And in certain cases, like, you know, the flexibility that we get by working with the partner factories for certain clients of ours also is helpful. So yes, that remains in our strategy and will continue to be there. A certain percentage may not be a big chunk. We do this kind of partnership factories where we source from.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one. Our next question comes from Aditya Sen with Robo Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to understand about the acquisition that we made in Bangladesh. Earlier, we were in the partnership model, and now we are shifting to the self-owned model. Am I right on this, sir?
This particular case, like, you know, one of the partner factories that we worked with for some time.
Yeah.
And then we took the decision to acquire that company. That's the case of Alpha Fuel.
Yeah, yeah, please go ahead.
It may not be, like, you know, the only formula that will work in future. So there will be certain partnership factories which will continue to be partnership factories. And, for example, what we are seeing in Central America, like, we are in exploration and close discussions. So there we haven't worked as yet. But, yeah, from the beginning itself, we will be acquiring a shareholding.
Okay, so all in all, we will proceed with the partnership model if we see a good partnership.
And as I mentioned, like, it will not be the majority of the percentage of our business, but it will play a role.
Okay. One more. In the initial comments, you mentioned that we are expecting a revenue growth of 15 to 20%. So, what will be the growth drivers for this? Will it be only macroeconomic or the acquisitions that we are looking forward to make and the capex?
Yes, like, we as a company have, I would say, a sight on a continuous growth, anywhere between 15 to 20% in a CAGR level year on year. Of course, there are certain times, certain quarters where the market is fluctuating, whether because of war or because of inflation or because of interest rates going up, or sometimes, like we saw, like, at least half the year last year was a huge concern on the over inventory position in markets like US and all. So otherwise, like, you know, we will follow our strategy to have this growth of about 15 to 20%. So that's what I can foresee in the near future, over the next 5 to 7 years, if we talk about in that horizon. So we will be exploring, if you look at our mission vision statement, like, you know, we are working in this particular field of providing fashion and manufacturing and supplying apparel products to our customers, and doing a supply chain service. That means try to be more end-to-end. So in our statement today, like what I mentioned about the licensing part of the business in US, so that's a part of our supply chain. So that means, like, you know, we, for a particular licensed brand, like, we as a company will do the entire designing, manufacturing, and then selling it to the retailers. So that done by this new division that we're creating. So those kind of opportunities we will continue to explore, either various regions of manufacturing, partnerships in manufacturing.
And just to add to this point, which Philip mentioned, if you look at our current capacity utilization, which is a blended capacity utilization, we are now at 65% plus. I think there is enough headroom for at least, a couple of years to really keep on adding within the existing capacity while we are looking for an opportunity for expansion, as Philip mentioned.
Okay, thank you for this. Next, I would like to know the taxes, outlook on tax. Until when are we going to sustain this range? And are we expecting 25% of tax in the coming years?
Sorry, there was some noise from the backdrop. I could not hear you. Are you talking about the tax rate?
Yeah, tax rate.
So, see, the tax, you're talking about the corporate tax rate, just to clarify, right?
Yeah.
So, the tax rate, is applicable in all the country at a different rate. The Hong Kong, we have a different combination of nil 0% of corporate tax, and then there is a 16.25%. Bangladesh is a combination of tax on the turnover or 10% of the deemed profit. And Vietnam is 10%, Indonesia has a 22% plus, India is 25%. So it all depends, which part of the geography the maximum profit is getting generated, and our blended tax rate will be applicable. So I do not see that, we'll be falling the 25% bracket at all, because, our 30, in the India contribution on the top line is only 35%, for over last, if you look at 3 to 4 years time period. And the other part of the profit is getting in overseas country, which will be lesser than 25%. So the blended rate will be, let's say within 15 to 18% is something which we can look at.
Okay, this was great. Thanks a lot. I'll fall back in the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Faisal Hawa with H.G. Hawa & Company. Please go ahead.
Sir, you mentioned in your initial comments that now the funds, as given as margin for LC, are not being taken into ROC calculations. So, what effect does it have on our ROC going up? By what percentage does it go up? And what is the reason for doing this?
Yeah, so it's a 1% impact. The ROC will improve by 1%. The reason for exclusion was that, since these funds were really, when you look at the capital employment, employee point of view, these are earmarked for making the payment against the trade creditors which are standing in books. So we thought it is appropriate to follow a conservative thing, appropriate that towards the trade river rather than setting it from the long-term and the short-term borrowing, so to say. So that's the reason, Otherwise, your ROC will improve by 1%, so it will become 25% plus against 24%. So we are following just the conservative on that.
So are we saying that the ROC has gone up from 12% the previous FY to now 24% in this FY?
Yes, you are right.
So in effect, you have almost, you have more than actually fulfilled your promise given in the previous con call that the ROC will go up.
Absolutely. Thank you for reminding. Yes, we were looking at, close to 20, and we were happy that we could deliver on that, much above that time period. Overall, we are always targeting that any new project which is taken in the company, whether it's a brownfield acquisition or even the capacity enhancement at the existing factory, if any capex is coming from any country, when the CFO, then everybody has to look at return on capital employed has to be close to 20% to start, overall in a period of 2-3 years time period that project has to generate. Initial 6 or 8 months can be lower, but eventually this project should have the capability of reaching a 20% ROCE. And that is a yardstick, for approval at a board level also. This cadence has actually been set up, in the last 12 or 14 months of multiple deliberations.
Sir, and do we still hold on to our target of almost growing 20-22% every year in volume terms? For the next 3-4 years, it may not happen like every year, I can understand that, but generally, have a CAGR of 20% for 3-4 years in volume terms. And also, sir, what is our ROE for FY23?
FY23. So the if you look at our effective tax rate, it is coming to be around 10% because of the distribution of the profit in line with that. So I think we should be close to 18-19% of return on equity given this kind of a spread across the country.
And you feel that this will be now maintained over the next 3-4 FYs, the ROC and ROE, those metrics are now very much in place as a very big foundation. It is not due to any yearly seasonal factors or anything.
Yes, you are very right. I don't think there is not any seasonal or one-time impact that is coming in the ROC improvement. Now the ROC target, as I mentioned, we are targeting very clearly, and all our CAPEX or any other decision which is financial capital allocation is between 18-20%. So we should be able to maintain that. There can be a certain period, when you are incurring a CAPEX, there is in a particular factory, and before it starts generating the incremental return, it may take a while, maybe a couple of quarters before it starts generating. But overall, when we look at it, the incremental capital employment should be able to generate 18-20%. So net-net, we should be always, close to 20%.
And sir, on a consolidated basis, what is our capacity utilization in all the factories?
So the blended capacity utilization is around 65%. This is what as an answer to the earlier question I was mentioning, that within the existing capacity, partnership and, our own factory, there is a potential for us to really grow, for the next couple of years to utilize that. And these 2 years will be also, looking at, more opportunity for collaboration, whether it's a partnership for the joint venture or maybe, the brownfield acquisition. So.
And sir, we are also seeing, the emergence of 3 or 4 very big groups in garments, like, Reliance Trends and, Aditya Birla Group. So are we making any kind of efforts to become like a choice contract manufacturer for them also very early into their evolution?
I don't think so. I would request Pallab if he can just mention about it.
Yeah, our focus has still been in a global manufacturer. Yes, India would be one of the country, but yes, as of now, current focus is still the opportunities to encash upon.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we request you to restrict to 2 questions per participant. Our next question comes from Pulkit Singhal with Dalmus Capital Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. Congrats on a great set of numbers. Am I audible?
Yes, you are audible.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. First question to Pallab. I mean, if you can just help us understand qualitatively how the discussions are going on with potential brands or existing customers. I mean, have those conversations, number of such conversations picked up versus, say, last year? And what is the nature of those conversations? How has that changed? What is their focus like versus last year and currently?
Yes, conversations are happening at a full pace, I would say. In fact, I'm taking this call from US only. So that's why I think there was a delay because we had some technical snag for connecting. So we apologize for that. Starting this call a little late. There have been a huge amount of conversation and interaction with most of the customers. So either they are visiting us or they are asking us to visit them. Various strategic conversations are going on at this point of time. Yeah, market is in that influx. What happened in the last 12 months, I think, will have a long-term repercussion on the industry as a whole, how the retailers would think and build up their strategies. So that's evolving and undergoing. So there could be certain risks. We are seeing certain customers becoming by the day, and certain others like who have a very strong strategic vision and are strengthening themselves quite a lot. So yes, there's mover and shaker kind of activities on in this market of US especially.
Okay.
You are. Yes, till the holiday season, another gentleman also mentioned, there were numbers were quite low because most of the US retailers had inventory and they have been not been buying for those products. So as we get into spring-summer goods of 2024, so that means for the retailers of Q1 and Q2 of 2024 when they are buying, how they would be selling. So that season, they are still, like most of the retailers, are conservative. I am hearing that they would be buying anywhere between 15 to 25% conservatively and keep some budgets open to see. So that's why for them, options like nearshore and all would be more important. When they want to see like how the customers are reacting and the consumers are reacting, what is the kind of buying trend that is coming up in the consumer. So that wait and watch also is happening in the market.
Okay. And the guidance you mentioned of 15 to 20% on a CAGR basis for revenue growth. What is it that you expect for next year? Will it be in this band or do you expect lower?
15-20% compared to their normal sales, that was like pre-pandemic or after pandemic, there was definitely a couple of quarters where there was a lot of pent-up demand. So from those high levels, if you calculate, then they are projecting almost 25% or 15%.
No, my question is on the revenue guidance for the company. You had mentioned a 15 to 20% revenue growth CAGR is what you're striving to achieve over the next few years. The question is, for FY24, will our revenue growth be in this band or will it be lower?
Our strategy and planning and implementation is more towards the same, to have this growth. Unless until, like, you know, what we know today is what is the current situation of the market. So if the dynamics changes further to the bad or to becoming much worse, then maybe it will be more challenging for us. But with the current challenges that we have in our hand, we have planned this way.
Understood. This last question is on debtor days. It has come down significantly. You used to have 48 to 50 days average debtor, then it became 41 last year, and now 33 average trade receivables. Is this also reflecting your cautiousness while dealing with customers, and therefore, as things pick up, this debtor days also goes up, or is this sustainable? Is this some level of customer mix which allows you to operate at 33 days on?
That's something like Sanjay and me have been mentioning in our earlier calls also. Like, we definitely do a huge amount of focus on the risk mitigation. So our customers are still working with 60 days or 90 days kind of terms. We do organize ourselves in such a manner so we avoid that risk of 60 to 90 days. And some of our customers are definitely reducing their time. The people like who have done well, better, their finances, as they have improved, they have improved their payment terms. So it's a combination of both. But Sanjay's policy has been very clear. Like, we have not been taking that risk, and we have the various means of either factoring or insuring and taking it earlier. So that's something, like, Sanjay, if you want to add.
No, Pallab, you have captured it right. So our policy remains intact, Pulkit. I mean, I think our strategy of focusing on bringing the liquidity into the system and also do the risk mitigation from the post-shipment perspective is remains intact. Any new customer who's coming in goes through the same scrutiny. And this is how the process normally goes. So we like to liquidate our receivable at the earliest, whether through supply chain financing, it is non-recourse factoring, or from the from the receivable factoring that the bank offer us without any recourse. So those avenues and efforts will always be continuing.
So 3 years out, will it remain at this level or higher? I'm just trying to get a band. I mean, because there's a huge fluctuation.
It's a combination of the customer, which is there. Some customer, you know, the shipment time may take a little longer. So in May, you know, we may say, you know, 10, 15 days can be added depending upon the mix of the customer which is coming in that total revenue or that particular quarter.
Okay, got it. Thank you. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Chinmay Kabra with MK Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. I just wanted to understand what percentage of our production comes from the partner factories and how much is it from the capacity that we have inbuilt?
So we have given a breakup between percentage of partnership factory. We said for 13 to 14% is coming from the partnership and the rest is our in-house manufacturing as we close this financial year.
Okay. And I just wanted to understand what is the impact on the margins taking the partner factory route and production being done in our own factory?
I mean, we will not be sure that, you know, in terms of the separation, but it's a part of our strategy. You know, some style will go to the partnership, some will come here. It's a you know, bouquet of the style which are offered to the client, to the buyer, and accordingly, you know, the rationalization takes place in line with that. So let's look at a blended margin which is existing because both coexist.
So the blended capacity of 65% which is given is only for the utilization which is done at our factories, right? Not inclusive of the partnership factories, if I'm not wrong.
Including of partnership factories.
Okay. Right. And just another question regarding the demand scenario. You have, I just wanted to confirm that with the holiday season approaching, you are seeing that there is a little conservatism in terms of orders which are being placed by the retailers. Am I right?
Yeah, for the holiday season, definitely the over-inventory situation of US played a significant role. Most of the retailers have very conservatively because they had inventory from the earlier years. That's general in the market, that the situation was. And I think that's why, like you must have seen in the news also, like, you know, a lot of capacities are open, a lot of vendors are not doing well. That was the main reason.
I understand, but going ahead, like in the month of Jan, Feb, we have seen that the inventories for the retailers have started coming down and new orders are being placed by them. So, isn't that the scenario currently, or are you still facing issues with the retailers placing orders?
Definitely, as I just mentioned, from spring onwards, that inventory situation will not play any significant role in terms of their booking. So most of the retailers are talking of exhausting that inventory, over inventory that they had. Now going forward, whether they will buy 100% or they will buy conservatively and they're waiting for the market to pick up, that they don't go back into an over inventory situation. So as a retailer, like if I had bought 100 pieces last year to sell, so this year my planning would be to go with and then see like how the market is and then buy this balance 10 to 15 close to our season, seeing the consumer's response. That's where like nearshoring or touring, that means the lead time.
Understood, sir. Yeah, those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rishi Gupta with Goldstone Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Pranav and Sanjay. First of all, congratulations to you on your outstanding.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gupta. You will have to pick up the handset.
Hello.
And now it's better.
Yeah. And
Mr. Gupta, we are not able to hear you clearly.
Okay. Excellent. I think so. This is a problem. Then.
Mr. Gupta, we are still not able to hear you.
Okay. Okay. I will connect again. Let me connect again.
Thank you. We move on to our next question from Vishal Prasad with VP Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. I have a few more questions. When we think about our industry, usually what comes to our mind is what happened in Bangladesh a few years back. So we as a company, how do we ensure that Rana Plaza doesn't happen to us?
If I have to answer that question, there are two aspects. One, from what's happening from our own regulations in India and how the vendors are approaching the business. And the second is there are certain regulations which are followed by the customers also. So there have been now audits where we are looking at all the building structure, the strengths. So that kind of, you know, procedure of certifications and all are prevalent in India also now. And the key customers, the big ones, are asking for that. So whether it's a Gap or Walmart and all, any big customers or any nice customers when they are working with us, so they are definitely asking for that kind of certification of the buildings and the infrastructure, the structural strength and all are being checked. So, yes, there were a lot of focus on Bangladesh. Today, fortunately, Bangladesh is in a very strong position. Most of the buildings engaged in our industry is following all these protocols. Same thing has started in India as well, I would say. So any new construction that is going on, definitely those specifications are very important. I'm not sure about the domestic market and the domestic brands as yet, like, because from Government of India also, I think they are a couple of conversations that I had in which they are trying to formulate this process as of now. But for international clients, it's already existing.
Okay. And sir, what percentage of our revenue comes from fast fashion? And given that the turnaround time is and probably 3-4 weeks or 6 weeks in fast fashion, so how do we deal with this scenario? Because usually our contracts would be, we have to turn around in 3 to 6 months, but in fast fashion it's different. So how do we do that?
Fast fashion, yes, has not been term in the last decade because it's generating too much to the environment, what's happening to the environment and all. So that's why if you see most of the retailers are not using the term first fashion. Like even the biggest ones like Inditex Group, their brands were really into fast fashion product earlier, and some of the other European retailers. So they have also taken a different strategic route. So they have become much more sustainable. They are definitely talking about renewable energy or recycling of their products. So that definitely is the new trend. In terms of quick reaction to the demand situation, so that's various solutions are being looked into and various strategies are there among the retailers. So just like from concept to design, if they have to do in 3 weeks or 4 weeks, so that's where, like, you know, nearshore and onshore is playing a very important role where they don't have the transportation timeline. So yes, European retailers are buying a lot of goods within Europe, and so is the trend that I'm seeing in the American market as well. So how you produce that good, whether it's a quick lead time or a long lead time. So there the supply chain has to be established. So whether it's the raw material part as well as the manufacturing part. So that's being now looked into by most of the retailers so that it continues to be sustainable even with a short duration of time. With us, yes, we are looking at that both. We do a significant amount of production for Inditex Group out of Bangladesh. So their initial orders where we are talking about establishing the raw material design and everything, so that would give us at least about 3 months kind of time. But when they need the replenishment, so once that the mill, the raw material, fabric, and how the garment has to be manufactured and all the approvals, that once that is in place, then they look for a quicker turnaround, which is maybe like 5 weeks in place of 12 weeks. So that's something is in place. But yeah, whatever is happening now is very, very sustainable approach has been taken by all the retailers. So yeah, when you are asking the question about quick turnaround versus a long turnaround, if it's from sustainability point of view, it is definitely being taken care of. So the planning is also much more clearer now. So the customers who are looking for quick turnaround book their capacity way in advance with us. So that means our planning can take that into consideration and then do it.
So, sir, when we look at our partner factories, and they would be having some capacity. So have we put a cap on from our side that we will not book more than certain percentage of their capacity available so that they are not 100% depending on us? Is there a number that we have thought of?
We will always be a manufacturer of our processes, because see, like, we take pride in that process, how we are sourcing our raw material and how we are manufacturing the goods, the proper good manufacturing processes or ethical practices. So that something is our USP to our customer. Naturally, like, the kind of customers that we are being strategic to and how we are coming across to them, it cannot be 100% on sourcing model. So it will be always manufacturing. Now, within that, a certain percentage we can say, like, partner factories can be there where we set it up as per the requirement of the customer and our own SOPs. So, like, whatever is the Pearl SOP, so whether you are taking the goods from our 100% own factory or the dedicated lines and the dedicated capacity that I have in a partner's factory. So for a customer, it will be the same service and the same approach. So that is our endeavor. I'm not saying that we are 100% out there, but we are, whatever, 70 to 90%, we are in that journey. The capacity percentage to our overall turnover will always be limited to these lower numbers that you have been hearing consistently from us now.
So let me say, rephrase, probably I was not clear. So what I was asking is, we have partner factories, and they would be having some capacity with them. So do we go and say, okay, we will take your 100% capacity, or have we put a cap that we will not take more than 50-60% of the capacity from the partner so that they are not fully depending on us? That's from risk management perspective.
Yeah. So yes, certain factories we have an arrangement of learning their X percentage of their lines. So, like, if the factory or the partnership factory may have 30 lines factory, so if our commitment is for the 10 lines, so we would take care of the 10 lines. Generally, we are not in 100%. So maybe, like, only one or two in some cases. Where, like, for example, the Alpha acquisition, when we were very clear that we would go in that path, so we started taking 100% capacity management of theirs. Otherwise, it's a part only. We don't want to be in the 100%. So,
thank you.
Want to be very more specific? Yeah, I would say in cases that what we are aware of is not more than 30 to 50% of a partner factory that we are using.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rishi Gupta with Goldstone Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Are you able to hear me, Pallav and Sanjay?
Very clear. Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations on an excellent set of numbers. And you guys have made a very formidable business model. And I understand that you are giving, that you will be growing 15 to 20% every year in the top line. So what will be the profitability? Means your emphasis is on the profitability part also, like we could see in this quarter. So at the same time, you will be maintaining the profitability, or will it be higher since you are in a great mix right now and your product line, you have went into the blended and high-end products right now?
Our decision-making is definitely the basis of the profits. So we definitely want to take the decision where we are more confident of the range of 7 to 8% at least to start with, or as soon as possible. In some new projects, maybe take a couple of quarters to achieve there. But unless until we see that very clearly as a minimum, we are...
Mm-hmm. You will be taking some debt also? Like you have decreased the debt level, or like Sanjay said about that, the current capacities, you can grow for 4-5 years, 3-4 years in the current capacities only.
Because the current infrastructure that we have, with minimum investment, we can grow the size of our capacity. That means the factory, the locations, the area that we have, maybe we may add a couple of additional production lines, do a little bit more automation, maybe add an extra shed, working shed for us. So that's with that kind of thing, we can definitely do a capacity growth from 54 million pieces to almost 74 million pieces. That much runway we do have in front of us. Of course, that doesn't mean that we will not go for a greenfield project, because with the Indian government, the initiatives that they're talking about, we are also closely watching and looking into the opportunity. If something comes up, we will go for that as well. So which may be a greenfield project where we would be needing capital to do something. But yes, not
sure.
Majorly looking into like only greenfield or big projects or making a...
Just to add, Mr. Gupta, to be on your these three things. One is that the 15-20% CAGR is in 3 to 4 year time period. So we'll have a, as Pallav mentioned, there will be some quarterly volatility could be there. But eventually, this is what we should be able to, we are targeting it. On the margin side, we definitely are heading towards double-digit EBITDA. That's our target. Once the macroeconomic environment, Pallav mentioned in his earlier speech, also stabilizes, I think we should be heading towards a double-digit EBITDA kind of a margin in depending on the cost. Mixing the higher FOB customer and the product side, we should be targeting there. On the debt side, there will be some debt taken for the, but it is more of a capacity augmentation. It's a debottlenecking of existing, like say in one of the factories, we have a land which is available, and there is already a factory already established. So if you have to extend it and to make it, add 35-40% of more capacity by making an extension there, we will be looking at those opportunities which Pallav mentioned about those things. So yes, the there will be a mix of debt and equity. But as I mentioned, the overall return on capital employed has to meet that threshold level what we have said.
Definitely. What is the dividend policy? Because I saw some document that 25% of the...
I think please join the queue for follow-up questions. Thank you.
Hello.
We move on to our next
question. Answer this and then we can move on.
We move on to our next question, which is from the line of Naitik Mota with Sequent Investment. Please go ahead.
Congratulations on good set of numbers. Sir, just two questions from my side, both on the Bangladesh unit. So since the last few quarters, we have been doing low double-digit margins in Bangladesh. And what do we see? Are these margins sustainable? And some picture on margins that we expect in FY24. Also, what are the power costs like in Bangladesh in quarter four and quarter one right now?
Do you take that?
So, you're mentioning about the first question is about the margin in Bangladesh and its sustainability, right? So, the margin in Bangladesh, yes, it has been double digit for us. If I look at, return on capital employed for all the three factories which we have, one, the green field which commenced, and then the brown field, and then there is a existing factory which we're running over there, have been a good, healthy margin. With efficiency and operating leverage kicking in, I think we should be able to continue to maintain those healthy margins. As I mentioned, Pallav has also highlighted that, given the uncertainty around the little bit of the demand side, inflation and interest factor, there may be a one or two quarter which is showing a challenging, but overall, as a company, we are well set, in terms of achieving those set of margins which we have already achieved. So, in a way, that's a sustainable, barring, macroeconomic environment which may impact the situation for a one or two quarter at the most. That was one. Second, you mentioned about the... So, if you can...
Yeah, so some color on EBITDA margins for FY24 and the power cost scenario in Bangladesh.
Sure. So EBITDA margin, I think in speech Pallav has covered that, we are looking for sure to maintain the margin what we have achieved in this year. Of course, we always like to, as I mentioned, that our target is to reach to a double-digit EBITDA. Now, we all understand the macroeconomic environment, there is interest cost, there is inflationary challenges which are there in the near term. So, despite that, we feel that we should be able to maintain the margin. Once the situation stabilizes and things are really normalizes on the interest and inflation eases, I think we should be able to improve the margin on a sustainable basis from there on. But the first foremost is that what we have achieved, we should be able to sustain it and improve from there on. It can happen in this year, it can happen in the next year, early next year also, as the situation is on the demand side. Third is on the power cost. The power cost in Bangladesh has definitely gone up. Now, the exact number and all, I can give it to you later, you can connect with me. But yes, power costs have gone up, and accordingly, we have done the costing of the product in line with that. But, as I was mentioning, so it's linked to the margin and everything, what the cost is going up. And inflation is impacting it. Some part of the inflation we are able to build in the costing. However, considering the demand scenario, you have to give a certain portion and bear those costs with us. So that may have a little bit of influence on the margin in the short term.
Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Amit Kumar with India Capital Fund. Please go ahead.
Hello. Many thanks for the opportunity and great set of numbers, sir. I just wanted to learn two things. First, basically, your debtor days have gone down drastically to 45 days. Is it a one-time affair? Or what kind of demand trends are there? Especially from Europe and the US, and what are the cost competitive advantage your factories have got in Bangladesh and Vietnam and Indonesia? Because the tax structure is just 3% margin, what I understand. So anything additional you can put a light on that in details, or we can do it offline also if you can explain.
On the debtor days, I would just like to mention that, as I was replying to earlier queries as well, the debtor days has been achieved with a combination of getting this financing from the bank, supply chain financing and the factory financing, and that we will continue to have it. However, as per the number of days and particular year end, it is a function of, customer mix in that particular month, number of shipments which have taken place in the last month of the year, and how evenly they are distributed in the last quarter. But overall, we look at, we should be in the range of, plus minus, say, plus 10 days, not can't reduce from there, 25 to 35 days kind of a debtor we should be there. So it's not a one-off phenomena. It's a result of the, full year exercise of, ensuring the liquidity and the risk management, which is really reflecting in the number right now. And for detailed questions on the other part of, I think we can have a one-on-one discussion also, as maybe comfortable or convenient time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Rishi Gupta with Goldstone Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes. Just one question. A document that 25% of the net profit will be given as dividend somewhere. What will be the future policy on that?
So dividend, Mr. Gupta, we have policy which is very clearly defined that, we will be, after doing a careful evaluation of the growth opportunity, the working capital requirement in the business, the dividend will be given. We definitely have a consistent policy of sharing certain percentage of profit as a dividend. However, while we are evaluating it, the two key factors which we have to look at, every geography has their own expansion plan, and it may not or may not have been fructified, but as long as they are work in progress, we would like to just evaluate them carefully before, going for a dividend. However, we are, given the profit getting increased, we definitely have a policy of increasing the dividend rate also as we go in coming financial year.
So will there be final dividend in this, or
As I said, we are evaluating, the various opportunity in each country. That decision will take 2-3 months time period. By the time the AGM happens, we'll be knowing what is the opportunity and how do we want to go for a internal accrual funding, or what is the best, in the interest of the shareholder, and what maximize the return for the shareholder.
Definitely. Congratulations once again.
I can say
that was my question.
Thank you.
See, definitely an important part of Pearl. So it's not that it will be only growth. So it will be a balance always.
that finishes my question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have reached to the end of the question and answer session. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you, everyone. I hope we have been able to answer all your questions satisfactorily. However, should you need any further clarification or would like to know more about the company, please feel free to contact our team or SGA, our investor relations advisor. Thank you once again for taking the time to join us on the call.
Thank you. On behalf of Pearl Global Industries Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.